Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske, and happy Friday to everybody. Fridays in my world often mean movies, and movies for people at a certain stage in life, which I may or may not be in, mean art films and documentaries and films that take me to a place I've never been before. And the films we'll be talking about today will take us to those places, like the Hadron Super Collider, or the mind of former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, or a film about a man I covered once as a rookie reporter in college and really had no idea who he was, Cesar Chavez. Well, I know who he is now. We'll talk about all of that and a whole lot more. With us today, film professor Cynthia Haynes. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
KCUR's own Steve Walker is here. Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
And Bob Butler of the Kansas City Public Library. You can read his film reviews at butlerscinemascene.com. Robert, how are you?
Doing great.
Steve Walker, give us a little update on the Kansas City Film Festival.
Well, there's a couple times a year. There's a lot of film festivals throughout the year, but there's two really big ones. One is in April and one comes in the fall. This one is put on by the Kansas City Filmmakers Jubilee. It's its 18th year. And if our website's got a link to the schedule, and I've seen several of the films this year, and there's a little review on our website as well, but there's still a chance for people to see some really good docs, people who may miss True False.
Yeah.
There's four that I've seen that are really worthy. The one is Tonight is of Gore Vidal, the United States of Amnesia. Yeah. Who's more worthy of a documentary than Gore Vidal? And it's sort of like, you remember we talked about the Elaine Stritch movie. They captured her toward the end of her career. She's leaving her city. This movie captures Vidal at the end of his career. He's leaving Italy in this case. Very good movie. Rich Hill is screening tomorrow.
I want to see that.
That was filmed in Rich Hill, Missouri, which I stopped at to use the facilities not too long ago. It's a look at three teenage boys and their family's struggles, and struggles is putting it mildly. There's a film also Saturday, The Galapagos Affair, Satan Came to Eden, which has all of this archival footage and home movies about this couple from Europe who moved to an uninhabited island in the Galapagos and just lived off the land. They began to get some publicity, and then other people thought, oh, this sounds so idyllic. I'm going to go, too. And these people start showing up, and they were like, what are you doing here?
Wow.
This
wow.
was our dream. This was our life. So it's really interesting. The last one I'll mention is called Slingshot. It is the guy who invented the Segway. He's an inventor, real quirky, eccentric guy, and he has now invented a machine that will take the most fetid water in the most rural parts of the planet and turn it into drinkable water.
Wow.
So all four of those are still to be shown at this festival.
That may have more potential than the Segway ever turned out to have. Maybe.
Amen.
Yeah, and the movie stars, people, they're asking people about him. They said, didn't he fall off a mountain on a Segway? And that was somebody else. They got those people confused. But the film festival is at the Alamo downtown and at the Cinemark Plaza. So go to KCUR.org. Arts and Culture, Film, and you'll find a link to the schedule.
You know, Bob, if you want to attend a film at a film festival, just show up at the box office like you normally would, or how does it work?
It really depends. I have found in the past that you the best way to do it is to buy those passes. You get front of the line. You don't have to deal with a lot of the hassles. On the other hand, sometimes there's a great benefit in doing that whim, the spur of the moment thing. Get in line, be surprised.
Right.
Okay, let's go to some films that have opened up now. And Steve Walker, let's talk about Lunchbox. A government clerk on the verge of retirement inadvertently becomes acquainted with a neglected young wife and mother.
Exactly. And it's set in Mumbai and mostly subtitled. But there's a tradition in that city of there's a huge industry of people packing lunches in these stackable thermoses almost, but they're bigger than a thermos, but yet they're four sections. And so there's this delivery. Lunch hour means delivery of all of these tins. And this guy gets one, and the food's delicious, and but it's a wrong delivery. And it turns out that a woman is really making that for her husband, who never eats her food, and they begin to have this kind of relationship, but they really don't meet. I mean, Cynthia, how can you
Well, it's like that. You've got meal. I mean, mail.
Good one.
I thought it was a delightful film. It's a romantic movie, and it stars Irfan Khan, who is a major Bollywood star.
Oh, he's a great actor.
He's really good at
And we know
film,
him
yeah.
from Slumdog Millionaire, Life of Pi. He says this is one of the most important movies to come out of India in years because it appeals to an international audience. And we also get a glimpse into middle-class life in India, which is something we very seldom see in films that from India that make their way here to the United States.
I wasn't, like, blown away by it, but I feel like it really does paint a picture of a Mumbai that we would see at noon. In that city, you'd see all of the bicycles and the tins and the chaos to get people their lunch. And he's lonely. She's in a marriage that's really unfulfilling. And they meet long before they actually meet through these meals that she prepares.
Do you have a clip from this film?
No, it's mostly not in English,
Mostly not in English. Okay, that film is titled Lunchbox, and we get two strong thumbs up here for it.
Well, yeah, stronger for me than
stronger for her, yeah.
Than Steve.
Okay. And we are back. Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We're talking this morning about art, independent, and foreign films, some very interesting films now open on area screens. I'm joined by film professor Cynthia Haynes, KCUR Steve Walker, and Bob Butler from the Kansas City Public Library. Let's turn, Bob, to a doc here featuring Donald Rumsfeld and directed by Errol Morris. The Unknown Known is the title of this film, a takeoff of his famous
Do you love quote. Rummy? Do you think he was the best Secretary of Defense ever? Do you think he was a creep? I don't care how you feel about him. After this movie, you're still going to be confused. Errol Morris, a couple years ago, had an Oscar-winning film in The Fog of War in which he took Robert McNamara and literally led the guy to tears talking about
and
the
And that was an amazing film.
Talking about the Vietnam era.
Yeah.
Will he do the same thing with Rumsfeld? Not a chance. Rumsfeld is the most evasive. I compare him to a worm that does not want to be put on a hook. And it just it twists and it turns and it flexes. And no matter what you do, you get this avuncular, rational grandpa persona that he gives you. You try to corner him, you try to put him on a hook, you cannot do it. It's a frustrating movie. At the same time, it's hugely informative about this man who has been a career bureaucrat his entire adult life. He's been Secretary of Defense twice. I think he's the second longest tenure in that position of anyone. Incredibly powerful guy. Who is he anyway?
So does the film answer that question ultimately?
No.
And that's the point. I don't think he wants anyone ever to answer that question.
Who he is, there are all those things you just said, Bob. He is the avuncular grandpa kind of guy. He's a very likable guy. His politics to me are not in the same ballpark or city or planet, but the movie is entertaining as heck.
Well, the Fog of War, I thought, was a brilliant, brilliant movie. And Robert McNamara wound up confessing to a great extent in front of that camera. Will you ever see Donald Rumsfeld admitting a failure or confessing in any way?
The word mistake may not be in his vocabulary.
Right.
Confessing to one would mean the end of days.
Right. But they dissect the torture memos, the quote-unquote, the known knowns and the unknown unknowns, and it really is kind of an interesting theory.
It's confrontational. I mean, when you think of your traditional documentary, I mean, you don't have this invisible director behind the camera. What you've got is one Errol Morris who's just having a battle with
We have a clip here.
Rumsfeld.
This will give you an idea of the kind of back and forth that this film represents.
From The Unknown Known.
Why the obsession with Iraq and Saddam?
Well, you love that word, obsession. I can see the glow in your face when you say it.
Well, I'm an obsessive person.
Are you? I'm not. I'm cool. I'm measured. If you look at the range of my memos, there might be 0.1% about Iraq. The reason I was concerned about Iraq is because 4-star generals would come to me and say, Mr. Secretary, we have a problem.
Wow. Errol Morris invented this camera that it allows the people he's interviewing to look at you, look through you almost, unlike any other talking heads in a documentary. He used it with McNamara. Yeah. He's used it in other
films.
A lot of films. And so Rumsfeld just kind of gets into your soul.
I wondered, at the end, he asked Rumsfeld, why did you agree to this movie?
Right.
And Rumsfeld says, I honestly don't know. I don't believe that for a minute. Rumsfeld agreed to do it because he was going to show that he could not be had.
Yeah.
That Robert McNamara might be reduced to tears, but not Donald Rumsfeld.
They recorded 34 hours of interviews, and how they brought it down to, an hour and a half? I sure would like to see what was left on the cutting room floor.
Well, the ultimate thing I took away from this was that, at least in the case of Donald Rumsfeld, public policy has nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with morality. He is asked, what about Vietnam? Did we learn any lessons? And he says, some things work out, some things don't. That didn't. That's his entire approach to Vietnam.
Wow. He's a brilliant man, complicated man. And the movie, I resisted putting it in my DVD player, but I was just magnetized by it.
Really?
Yeah.
Even though you don't walk away with a whole lot more knowledge of Donald Rumsfeld?
Yeah. No, I think it's a magnetic movie.
Because of the confrontation.
It's not so much. Recent history, it's looking at things differently. It's looking at his thousands and thousands and millions of memos and emails.
I think anyone interested in government and history really should see this documentary.
He is the unknown.
Yeah, he is.
You think you know him? Forget it. You don't.
That film again, The Unknown Known. Let's move on to Particle Fever, Cynthia Haynes, a documentary that follows the efforts of scientists in their quest to discover subatomic particles.
Now, I never thought I would describe such a documentary as entertaining and exciting, and it really is. Hmm. The insight into physics and the search for man's origins, it's the kind of film that you take a lot away from and contemplate what, in fact, you've just experienced. A lot of stuff did go over my head in terms of the conversation about physics, but they tried to tell a story that had very, very profound effects for the world. This was the largest experiment ever conducted in history. There were 10,000 scientists involved, engineers from about 150 countries. Hmm. And they wound up building this Hadron Collider in Switzerland. And originally it was going to be built in Texas. But because of politics and the search for the God particle, there was opposition to it. Anyway, two women are featured in this film because, as it turns out, the filmmaker said they were the most articulate, exciting, and interesting of the physicists that were involved in this project. And we have a clip from a young woman, Monica Dunford, who talks about her enthusiasm for this incredible project.
This is from Particle Fever.
The first time I ever saw Atlas was in 2005. I had come out just to see what Atlas would look like because there was a possibility that I could be working on it as a postdoc. I can remember walking in and just being like, you know, just stunned. I mean, me, stunned, you know, just, you know, already kind of having an idea of the magnitude. You know, people tell you, oh, it's 5 stories tall. And you go, oh, okay, 5 stories tall. And then you see 5 stories completely filled with microelectronics.
Actually,
well, it's an absolutely amazing construction project here.
In layman's terms, the experiment is put this way. They're smashing two things together and try to understand the stuff that results. I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Physics, I never took a class physics, but it's very entertaining. I agree with Cynthia.
So you enjoyed it?
So I'm my three to see, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. We're visiting today with our film critics, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler, reviewing all kinds of interesting art, independent, foreign, and documentary films here. Steve Walker, you wanted to make a little comment about Particle Fever, the last film that we talked about the Hadron Collider and a local connection to Kansas City here.
There's a local design firm named MK12.
MK12.
They worked on Quantum of Solace, that Bond film, and they have provided some amazing, spectacular digital imagery to help explain particle physics to the common man,
knuckleheads like us.
Yeah,
well, MK12
yeah.
sounds like they're been assigned a task by James Bond or somebody.
They were invited to speak at the Tivoli April the 4th, unfortunately,
a
little while ago. And also David Kaplan, who was the host, narrator, and producer of the film, were at the Tivoli.
Okay, a shout out to MK12 there. Cynthia Haynes, Tell me about a film, Bad Words. A misanthropic man exploits a loophole to enter a national spelling bee.
Bob, I'll let you take that one.
All right. Well, do you remember a film about, 8 or 9 years ago called Bad Santa?
Sure.
This is its little brother. Justin Bateman, who not only appears in the film as the star but directed it, plays a man with, he's 40 years old. He finds a loophole in the National Spelling Bee rules that allow him to go all the way to the finals. And he is scurrilous in his willingness to do anything to freak out the little kids around him, these young innocents, shake them up so that they cannot provide any competition. Not that they would, because this guy apparently is a genius when it comes to words. He does have an ulterior motive. He's there for revenge. I won't even get into that. The heart of the movie is his friendship with another one of the competitors, a small kid of Asian Indian descent played by Rohan Chan, who this kid is unbelievably cute, and at the same time, he's a great little actor. As you would imagine, the innocent kid softens up the hardened guy, but not as much as you'd think. I don't want to make this seem like it's a big deal. It isn't. I found it to be a very funny, very black film. I believe we've got a clip here where he takes his young charge, this kid who's in the hotel room down the hall from him, and takes him onto the mean streets of the city where they're doing this. He's going to show him some of real life. The kid is obsessed with, well, women.
You don't have any friends. Sound like a real loser. I bet you crush ass, though, right? You make up for it with the women?
No.
No girlfriend for you? You can't find one little chicken tikka to get your shrimp tandoori all up in?
Nope. When I do get one, it's going to be a girl with nipples.
Is that right? Well, lucky for you, they all have nipples, pal.
Every girl does not have nipples, no.
They do.
No, they don't.
Buddy, I promise you, they do.
They don't.
All right. I don't know how I missed that.
You look at the shirts. On some, you can see the little nipples poking through the shirts. In others, nothing.
That's from Bad Words.
Well, so there's some wisdom there, but not much.
Jason Bateman is so likable. I really like him as an actor and as a person from what I've seen of him interviewed. And he's one of the worst, most despicable people on the planet in this film.
The key, to a, film, the key to a film
but
like
hilarious.
This is, will you laugh anyway?
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're going to laugh anyway.
So it's not creepy, it's hilarious, you're saying.
It's creepy, too.
It's a little creepy.
Yeah. What is it? One or the other. Yeah.
And I think this guy, Andrew Dodge, deserves a lot of credit. He wrote the script. He said he was inspired by the documentary Spellbound and how geeky so many of these kids were. I thought it was terrific that Bateman's character is an eighth grade dropout who proofreads product warranties for a living.
And he says, you know, the rules say you can't have be past the eighth grade. And listen, brother,
I did not make it past
So you're wondering
eighth grade.
Why he's so angry and so rude throughout the film. But then there's a payoff at the end.
And his big foe is Allison Janney, who's really good as the woman who
she's
very uptight woman who runs the spelling bee.
Catherine Hahn is quite good in it, too.
Oh, she is. Right.
Yeah, she's from Parks and Rec.
So thumbs up from all of you?
Yeah.
Yeah, modified thumbs up.
You're easily offended, do not see this movie. If you did not like Bad Santa or Bad Grandpa or whatever,
don't
see this movie.
Okay, let's get onto a more serious topic here. Cesar Chavez, there's a biopic out titled Cesar Chavez. It's about the Mexican-American civil rights leader and labor organizer, Cynthia Haynes.
Steve, this story is way overdue. And unfortunately, it's not the kind of story that's going to really stay in the hearts and minds of those people who remember this era in the early 60s. For 5 years, Cesar Chavez tried to unionize the exploited farm workers. Michael Pena, who did a wonderful job in End of Watch, stars as Cesar Chavez, but he just doesn't have, I think, the strength as an actor to portray such an important figure in not just Chicano history, but in American history. And like I said, the story should have been told. Diego Luna, the actor, directed this film, and I think he just didn't have what it took to tell this story in a compelling way, which disappointed me terribly. I know there's been a concerted effort in the Hispanic community to get people to go out to see this film. I wish it were better. One thing that really bothered me was that Rosario Dawson portrays Dolores Huerta, who was actually a co-founder of the United Farm Workers. And in fact, she's relegated to a secretary here of making copies copies and running and answering the telephone. So it is, as far as the story goes.
So its history is wrong.
So the history, yeah. Well, yes. I mean, more attention definitely should have been paid to her. But he just didn't have the charisma. Now, you met him.
Well, I met him. I covered him as a Cub kid college student back in the 1970s when he came to the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And I knew then he was a man of great import, but I didn't know much more than that.
And it doesn't come across in this film as played by Michael Peña.
What's the clip we have here?
It is Chavez wants to explain to people in his organization that he wants to go back into the fields and get his hands dirty.
It's just one setback, Caesar. It takes a while to build trust. You have to be patient.
You know, they really don't care about the farm worker, Fred.
Oh. Gilbert, that's not true.
See, that's what I'm talking about, Fred. See, I have to be where it's happening. I have to get out of Los Angeles and go back to the fields where I started.
Okay, you know we're doing this together, okay? You knew this could happen. That's why we have a plan.
But not in an office.
But it's not the time to walk out now. You know what it takes. It's why I brought you in. The CSO will be behind you no matter what. But please, at least sleep on it.
I'm not tired, Fred. I want to get my hands dirty.
So a disappointing review for Cesar Chavez, yes. Cynthia.
The story is especially relevant today, and this is incredible. 50 years later, we're still battling over the rights of immigrants and farmers who are fighting to bring more farm workers to this country, to the fields.
I'm joined again by Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. We're talking about some good films, art, independent foreign films now showing. Bob Butler, let's move on to Face of Love. A widow falls for a guy who bears a striking resemblance to her late husband.
This is a good case of terrific acting, for me anyway, saving a film that is thick with narrative iffiness. The idea that anybody would see their dead husband's doppelganger is just so far out there that you kind of go, oh, please, what is this, science fiction? It isn't, but you've got Annette Bening, who is a terrific actress, playing the woman. The man she spots in a museum and starts stalking, practically, is Ed Harris, both great actors. What I find fascinating about the film was the moral quandary. She is almost a little bit nuts. She finds reasons to meet this guy. She finds reasons to hang out with him. So they end up dating. They end up sleeping together. She does not tell him what it is about him that she is so fascinated by. At the same time, he's genuinely falling in love with her. And there's a inequality here I found it weirdly compelling. Now, ladies and gentlemen,
yes.
Dive in.
Yeah.
I was very disappointed in the film. Ah. It seemed to me very shallow. No offense, but a Hallmark Hall of Fame, movie. Robin Williams plays this strange neighbor of Annette Bening's character. And I thought, what's going on here? It just seemed to me that it was a story told by someone who didn't really know how to tell what could have been, I think.
Well, the plot line's kind of weird.
I agree with Bob that Annette Bening and Ed Harris are always
and I agree,
watchable.
I agree with that, yes.
But it was a little creepy. And she was got a little stalkerish. And I don't think it worked very well. The one bit of suspense comes when her daughter comes back from college and sees him for the first time. It's the dead ringer. Ed Harris plays both people, by the way. We even say that?
Yeah.
And she sees that face, and she's like, oh, my God, what is
What's going
this about?
On here? Yeah.
That resonated with me. Other than that, it's a pretty weak movie.
We have a clip here.
We do. I'm not even sure what it is. Let's let her rip.
Annette springs a surprise, or her character does, on Ed Harris's character.
From Face of Love.
You getting back with him?
No, he didn't leave me.
So you're seeing him again?
Yes. No. No.
That's why you're hiding me? Because you're back with your husband?
No, no. He's dead.
He's dead?
He died.
Well,
I couldn't tell you.
Why not? You wanted me to believe that he'd just run away?
I'm sorry.
All this time?
I planned to tell you I did. I just never found the right...
You lied to me. I mean, why would you lie about something like that?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the screenplay sounds there a little worse than I remember.
Yeah. That's Face of Love, sort of mixed reviews here for Face of Love. And our final film today, it's gotten a whole lot of attention, Grand Budapest Hotel. It's a concierge and lobby boy get mixed up in the theft of a painting, and every star in Hollywood appears in this film in one manner or another. Lots of attention and kind of a lot of mixed reviews here, too, Steve Walker.
Well, it's Wes Anderson's latest film, and then you either love him or you find him really eccentric and his movies really odd and off-putting. I'm in the former category. I really love his movies, including Fantastic Mr. Fox. Like you said, Steve, it's set in the made-up country, Zubrovka, but it opens in the present? Is that right, Bob?
In the present.
Opens in the present. Tom Wilkinson plays an elderly, older guy who's a writer, and then he's thinking back, and then we see Jude Law as him at a younger point, meeting F. Murray Abraham, who's an older gentleman. And they start talking about him being his time as a bellboy in this hotel in like four decades earlier.
Yeah.
Right. So, and as Bob pointed out earlier, the screen kind of opens widescreen. And then as it gets to the 1930s, the movie is in the box
format.
Which I didn't
even notice.
Ralph Fiennes is the reason to see this. He's hilarious as this ambisexual.
He's a gigolo.
Yeah, a gigolo.
He seduces old ladies.
A lot of things. But, including Tilda Swinton, who's in it for about 5 minutes, which was...
Well, I wanted more of
her. Oh, I wanted much more. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this painting is... It's so confusing, and there's so much going on that it's really hard to encapsulate in a
show.
It's
almost a slapstick effort. He's thrown in jail. He escapes from prison, on and on and on.
I was a big fan of his last film, but this, to me, was a disappointment. I was pretty bored by it. The set designs were charming. The costume designs, I mean, the production values were A+. But as far as being engaged and really caring about what happens to this painting, I really got lost.
Well, I took my dad to go see it up in Minnesota a couple of weeks ago, and I slept through at least half of it. So there you go.
Yeah. I liked it. It's not. I was going to say Gravity, but that would be incorrect. It's no 12 Years a Slave. All About Eve.
The problem is it isn't Moonrise Kingdom.
No,
which was his last movie
not.
And which was a masterpiece,
people,
in my opinion.
Liked, yeah.
It was.
What's the clip we have here?
We have Jude Law is in the hotel in about the 50s.
Yeah, it's in the 70s,
60s,
maybe.
Okay, yeah. Identifying this older gentleman.
Who's this interesting old fellow?
I inquired of Monsieur Jean. To my surprise, he was distinctly taken aback.
Don't you know?
He asked.
Don't you recognize him?
He did look familiar.
That's Mr. Mustafa himself. He arrived early this morning.
This name will no doubt be familiar to the more seasoned persons among you. Mr. Zero Mustafa was, at one time, the richest man in Zubrovka, and was still, indeed, the owner of the Grand Budapest.
He often comes and stays a week or more, 3 times a year at least, but never in the season.
Monsieur Jean signaled to me and I leaned closer.
I'll tell you a secret. He takes only a single bed sleeping room without a bath in the rear corner of the top floor. And it's smaller than the service elevator.
That's from Grand Budapest Hotel. And Bob Butler, just quickly from the library.
Got three things to bring your attention to. Saturday, April 5th, 2 p.m., Plaza Branch, a fantastic documentary. Not April 5th, I'm sorry.
Whenever.
It's like May 5th.
The
Loving Story, a fantastic documentary about an interracial couple who were taken to court by the state of Virginia back in the 60s, and they took it all the way to the Supreme Court. Another film, Wonder Women, The Untold Stories of America's Superheroes, April 22nd at the Plaza Branch again. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's about how superheroes have eliminated women up until very recently. And finally, Movies That Matter, Sunday. This is on April 27th, 2 in the afternoon at the Plaza. We're showing The Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
I want to thank Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Thank you all.